this is the person I want in my team, not for her hard skills, but for her soft skills, because I'm a firm believer that you can have as many hard skills as you want, but if your soft skills are not on point, I can't change your essence. On the hard skill side, I can always train you. I think my life changed massively when I started recruiting the right people.
I'm Jessica Glauser-Giver.
And I'm Girish Balola.
And you're listening to the Destiny Benders podcast, where we speak with international educators and education entrepreneurs to hear their stories of how they got started and what keeps them going in international education. Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us today on Destiny Benders. Our guest on the podcast today is Alejandra Otero, who is the founder and CEO of Genius, who are education marketing experts with a purpose. Alejandra, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Ale, welcome to the podcast. So excited to finally have you on here. I'm glad we were able to find some time. As I was just saying, we're on three different continents, three different time zones, you know, the beauty of international education. But thank you for making time. You know, as we get started, just tell us a little bit about you. Who are you? What do you do? How did you get to where you are today? So let's get started with that.
Well, first of all, Girish, Jessica, thank you very much for having me here today. It's a pleasure for me to be here and definitely an honor. So who am I? I'm Alejandra Otero. For the ones who know me, I think I'm the true definition of the digital nomad, one day connecting from a continent and then the next one. I started at a young age. I'm originally from Colombia. I started in a French school back in Colombia. And when I was 17 years old, I moved to France to study my bachelor's there. It was just a fantastic experience. Then I stayed there and I did a master's. And when I graduated from my higher education, for some of you who already know me in the industry, I also have something in particular, which is the fact that my parents actually have an agency back in Colombia. So I grew up within that ecosystem, let's say, from a very young age. They have been operating the agency for over 25 years now. And so I was, what I always say is that I was their, let's say, guinea pig at a certain extent. They were sending me to summer camps here, to language courses there. And the moment I actually graduated from uni, they were like, okay, now you're ready to come back and you can work with us and continue the business, right? Yes, but actually, no, those are not my plans. And it was very interesting for me because when I graduated, I actually moved to Paris. I was living in Lyon and I started immediately working for business school in Paris. And I started leading their admissions recruitment for the Iberian and Latin American market. So it was a very interesting experience for me because I was not on the agent side, which I knew, but on the university side, yet having to work with those geographical areas that were already known to me, right? So I did 1 year there. It was super interesting. I was still very young and I started learning a lot of things. And one of the partners actually from that school ended up sending me an offer to move to Miami because they were opening their international campus, their international office in Miami. And they wanted me to start it basically from scratch. And guess what? I said yes. So I ended up moving from Paris to Miami. And there it was a whole learning experience because literally it was building it from scratch. I was traveling 8 months a year. So for the ones who think that this is just about tourism, trust me, it's one of the things that maybe people don't see when you travel that much is how much actually you lose, let's say, that work-life balance. Because whenever you're on the road, what happens is that you truly spend time in airports, hotels, and events abroad. and doing networking, which is all fantastic. And don't get me wrong, I'm absolutely grateful for all of that because that actually helped me building my career. But definitely there came a point where I said to myself, wait a minute, no one is doing my job when I'm actually on the road. And therefore, I have to get back to the hotel after the events and do all of the catching up. And when I come back home, it's all about doing laundry, unpacking and packing again, basically. And so that was a really life-changing experience. I did that for 2 years. And then I said to myself, wait a minute, this needs to change because I was succeeding. I was really not only meeting the targets, but also surpassing them. But my personal side, let's say, was at risk, if I must say it that way. So I said, okay, let's stop here for a moment. And whoever was in contact with me back then thought that I was absolutely crazy when I actually quit that role because I didn't have anything else planned at the moment. And so again, going back to my dad, who's an education agent back in Colombia, I was like, okay, amazing. So you're actually ready to come back now. It's the moment to take care of the business, right? Well, no, not just yet. I want to do something for myself. And that's when I actually started thinking, okay, what is it that I actually really have wanted to do for a while? And two things came to my mind. One was a doctorate and two was my own business. So I started like crafting some ideas, went to tropical destinations to get some inspiration from. And I ended up creating what was called back in the days, Neo Academy, which was my initial business. We did a rebranding 1 year ago. So now we're called Genius, but it was an education marketing consultancy in any case. Although the initial plans are definitely nothing compared to what we have today. And I think that's another story I can share as well. To the extent that now, 7 years after, I'm absolutely loving it, enjoying it. I've learned so much. Absolutely a lot of ups, downs, learning from failures, from success. And this is it. This is the journey I've been through for the past 7 years. I've been counseling a lot of institutions from the higher education side, from the K-12 language schools. The pandemic made us change our audience. We also went to NGOs, everything related to education marketing and international student admissions. So like having a 360 degrees understanding of how is the enrollment cycle? What do we need to do to enroll more students? Taking into account also some very important principles about ethics and many other elements that unfortunately, in some occasions, are forgotten in this journey. So this is where I am at the moment. Happy to deep dive on any of those topics.
I'm blown away by that whirlwind of energy and just the things that you have done since Colombia to a French school to a French university. I mean, the international perspective and viewpoint that you must carry with you is astounding. And then from there to Miami. I'm curious, though, you turned down your parents not once, but twice when they invited you to come back to Colombia and to take over the business, which it sounds like it was kind of their assumption that that's what you were going to do, and clearly not. What did they say to you? Take us back to that first time and then the second time, because of course, as a young woman, having studied hard and traveled, you would have your own ideas about what you wanted to do, as we all do, young men and women, and your parents were kind of thinking one thing and you're thinking something else. How did they react? Tell us about that story.
Yeah. So, Jessica, I think you're touching on a very important point here. Extremely lucky and grateful to have my dad as a role model. He has always been. And one thing that has sticked to my mind when I was at a very young age and I was seeing him attending ICEF and doing presentations at different schools, I was listening to him saying a phrase to parents and to other stakeholders, saying that what the role is as parents is to actually open the horizons for the kids and make sure that they can provide them with the best possible future for them. And every time I've actually said, oh, I have this idea, or actually I'm going to do this new project, I have only had anything related to supportive words, positive attitude. And I think that empowerment has also led me a lot to my own philosophy, which is to empower people to empower themselves. And therefore, I think that's part of my upbringing. And it not only happened, I think, at that level of parenting, but I was also very lucky to have my first professional experience back in Paris. The person I was reporting to was definitely nothing compared to the traditional boss you would have. That's when I learned the difference from what is a boss and what is a leader. And I've become, I think, that person who's always supporting people to go in their own direction, to trust that gut feeling and to try it out. And if it doesn't work, actually, the best possible thing is for you to learn about your mistakes and to learn from failure. So I think that's what has been my path. And all of this time, in all of my this kind of conversations, I've only been grateful for the process and for the people who have also helped to shape me. And therefore, nowadays, this is who I am. And I'm in a continuous learning process, but I try to transmit that same role model, let's say, to my own team.
Oh, thank you for saying that, right? You're absolutely right. There's a difference between being a boss and a leader, you know, being somebody who's a coach and a cheerleader to your staff, your team, all of that stuff. And, you know, going back to some of the things you're saying, just your journey, like especially when you're working as an entrepreneur, you're wearing multiple hats, doing all kinds of stuff. And for the most part, there doesn't ever feel like you have a break. Right? Because it's constant. It's 100% of the time, all day, every day. So in that journey, and I think we all struggle with that, whether you're an entrepreneur or just, you know, working in a job, but more so as an entrepreneur. So tell us a little bit about some of the things you're doing that gives you that break, gets you away from the day-to-day minutiae and the ability to then just kind of sit back, reflect, plan, strategize, innovate, and all of that. So what do you do? And what are some tips that you would give me and other people out there who are kind of in the same boat?
So Girish, I'm going to go a little bit backwards to answer your question, because this is something I truly believe should be said out loud to people willing to enter the industry, for example. And maybe I can share my story and hopefully it can inspire some people to continue, even if you have some real bottlenecks that you face at a certain stage. So when I started, I was very young. I was in a leadership role when I was 22 years old. I was a woman, a very young woman, and let's face it, Latina. So in some countries, that's not seen as something very positive. In some cases, at events, I had very unpleasant conversations. I had to like show up and almost, yeah, demonstrate that I'm worth it. Like you would start already with the wrong side of the story, unfortunately. That bias, I think I did feel it at the beginning, but it never put me down. And I think that's very, very important to be said, because I also go back to the leaders I had and to also my role when I moved to Miami. The person I was reporting to was a very strong power woman who was always supporting me as well, telling me like one of the best tips she gave me back in the day was, anyone can ask you whatever you want, but if you know your data, no one can counter facts. They can judge whatever you want, But if you are able to understand and to be as knowledgeable as possible with facts, they can't say anything to that. So I think it took me maybe a little longer, let's say, to understand that, okay, this is what I will have as a path. It will take me a little longer, but this is part of the learning process. And this is how I've been training my team. And that's why the concept of empowerment for me is so important. I'm, yes, the founder and CEO of my company, but for me, the CEO word is not chief executive officer, but chief empowerment officer. And I think that's very, very important in this journey. So to go back to your point of what do I do to disconnect, it took me a while, to be honest. I think for at least the first 3 years of my entrepreneurship, I didn't take holidays. Like literally the first time it was like, I can't. If I actually stop, this is it. Like I can't. But I think it was mostly something where I was very hard on myself and I was saying, okay, I need to continue. This needs to happen. And I was aiming very high and always pushing myself further, which is okay. But there comes a point where I go back to the concept of balance, right? So I think it was very important for me to get to recruit the right people. And you've met Girish Sole, who's our managing director now. I recruited Sole 5 years ago, and I've been training her from scratch. Her background is in finance, but she comes from the sports industry in the sense that she was a semi-professional tennis player. And I saw that in her with the like grip and how she can really make it happen. The consistency, all of these elements you find in like competitive sports. And I say, okay, this is it. This is the person I want in my team, not for her hard skills, but for her soft skills, because I'm a firm believer that you can have as many hard skills as you want, but if your soft skills are not on point, I can't change your essence, which is part of the soft skills. However, on the hard skill side, I can always train you. And therefore, I think my life changed massively when I started recruiting the right people and surrounding myself with people who would become an expert in their own fields to the extent that they would become even better than myself. And therefore, I did all of that training. I did the training. We are very heavy on CRM customization, creation. And back in the days when I started, I was the one doing all of the implementations on HubSpot, Salesforce, Microsoft Dynamics. Nowadays, the person we have on board, our growth hacker, there's no chance I can know half of what she does. And I think that's part of the journey. So I've learned to delegate more. And Sole nowadays is the one actually taking care of the whole journey with our clients. She's the one doing all of the operational support. She's the one managing the team. And where do I sit? I sit on the networking part. All of the trainings are done by me. And definitely the vision. And where do we want to go? What's the next step? And for that, to go back to your question, and sorry I'm taking so long for this one, that's where I try to find spots. I do this at least once a year, where I try to truly disconnect to reconnect. And those spots that I find, wherever in the world, I'm connecting from Thailand today, but I try to do that in spaces where I can have many other activities that are not related to the day-to-day work. So in this case, yoga, meditation, and horseback riding, which has been my passion since I was a very young girl. And therefore, those are the moments where I actually completely am focused on those tasks, those activities, to the extent that I completely forget about work. And when I come back, the productivity is just insane. And that's when the new ideas flourish. So I've done this in many different continents. Today, I'm connecting from Asia. at the breaking point, let's say, when Sole was joining us, I did that from Africa in Tanzania. So you know, who knows what's going to be the next one, right? But I think that moment where you are connected with yourself is when you can truly understand, okay, this is the must versus the good to have in the day-to-day. And that's where you see the opportunities, the threats, and really understand how is it that I can make an impact in the upcoming generations through what we do on a day-to-day basis. And that is, for me, my current core.
Yeah. Can Jessica and I come next year, wherever you're going?
Absolutely.
So as you've been speaking, Ale, I've been thinking to myself that you have been CEO and founder of Genius for how many years now? I didn't quite catch that.
It's been 7 years now, Jessica.
Seven years. Okay, that's what I thought. But your words and your wisdom sound like it's coming from somebody who's been doing this for 20, 30 years. I mean, just what you're saying, there's these little tidbits of insight and wisdom, and that I think that many people who have been doing it for much longer have yet to grasp in terms of how to lead a team, how to be a leader, how to find your productivity. All of those things, you just seem to be hitting it, you know, the nail on the head, but a lot of people are not. How did you learn this? I mean, is it just something that's innate inside of you, which is very possible? Or did you study this at university? I don't think I heard what you studied at university. So maybe it was something you learned. How did this just come to you? Because people spend years of their life searching for the insights and wisdom that you have. And I want to know how can I get it?
Well, Jessica, first of all, thank you for the compliment. This means a lot. I think I've not planned any of this per se. It has just been, let's say, a combination of learnings throughout my journey. Maybe there are some things that have shaped me in each phase of my life, I would say. Going to a French school was definitely something that has made me see the world with a very different angle, I would say. I remember back in the days, we had always to do this very long dissertations and always reply to whatever question. The answer always had to be yes, but, or no, but, right? But we had to always argue and always make sure that we have an argument for everything. So I think that training, even when I was a little girl at school, has shaped me in how I see the world. But that's only one part, I would say. Then the combination with how I grew up, I remember my very first experience abroad where my parents sent me. It was on my own to a summer camp, and I was 7 years old. Like, this is very young age. And I don't know if I don't have kids yet, but I don't know if I would send my kids when they would be 7 years old. But that's something that was very positive on me. And I'm forever grateful for that to my parents, basically. So I think that also shaped me because it opened the world to me at a very young age. Another thing for me as well, maybe to shape this path, was, again, thanks to those travels, I started getting to know people from very different cultures. I said that I started in the French school back then. I didn't study English at the beginning. The English I learned was from the different encounters with different nationalities. And I think that also pushed me to open up to very different cultures, to be a little bit more understanding at a very young age. Then when I started at uni, I did two things that were very interesting for me as well to shape the personality. One was the bachelor I did was at a public institution, like 450 people in a classroom, completely different setup compared to my master's. My master's was at a business school, and that was very different. My bachelor's was in business administration, so something very normal, let's say, very traditional. Then the master's was about entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship, so how to become an entrepreneur within a company. And that started already triggering a lot of curiosity in me, I would say. And then again, getting to meet the right people, I would say, was part of this journey of understanding that there is one element that for me is absolutely fundamental, which is trust. And my philosophy is that I trust you until you prove me wrong. So maybe I'm the one having it totally wrong because I trust everyone until they actually do something wrong. And maybe the best way to go, it's the other way around, is prove me that I can trust you and therefore I can do so. But I've decided to go with that philosophy. Another thing I've also always reflected on is whatever happens, everything happens for a reason. And whether you like it or not, you have to focus on what's under your control. Because otherwise, you're only going to be frustrated. You can't change it. So I think it's, maybe a lot of the readings I do as well, the traveling, for me, that's absolutely essential. And without any doubt, I would say that the people I've met in this industry have truly shaped me in to the extent that I really see some power women in this industry. And I always tell them, like, when I grow older, I want to be like you. And some of them really are, this role model that you would say, wow, I truly see in this person not only the business leader, but a true human being that is not afraid of showing who she is or who they are because of being the head of this company. Or like, it's really about understanding what your journey is and being open to whoever you can encounter, and always try to think, well, what can I bring to this person and what can I learn from this person? Maybe, that's the way I've been following this very wise advice.
Ali, are you secretly like 60 years old, just look like you're 25?
I'm definitely an old soul in a young body.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You talk about that trust. I say the same thing to people. You start with 100% of my trust, and it's for you to lose it. And if you lose it, you'll never get it back from me. But you always start with that. As opposed to being on the negative side saying, prove to me that I could trust you. Then you're just wasting a lot of time trying to prove to each other that you could trust each other. But, you know, having said all of that, I want to take you back to the work, right? So you alluded earlier to ethics and doing things ethically that seems to, you put it nicely, you said seems to have been forgotten or something like that you said. Although I feel like there are organizations that do stuff that they're not forgotten about ethics, but they've been driven by monetary gain. So in that context of everything that's going on in the world, post-pandemic, especially now, a lot of pressure on institutions to bring in that international student revenue, et cetera, et cetera. Where do you see things going? And what do you see are the biggest challenges in the industry right now? What are the opportunities for organizations like yours to come in and maybe help streamline some of the processes out there or the practices out there that so that they can be more ethical, more student-centered, student-focused, et cetera? Talk to us a little bit about that.
All right. Tough question, Girish, but challenge accepted. One thing that gets me thinking a lot always is at Genius, we get to work with both European institutions and let's say institutions from the Americas. That for me is extremely interesting because we get to see very different approaches and also habits, let's say, in the day-to-day work. One very interesting element I think that can be learned on both sides of the Atlantic, I would say, is the fact that I think with enrollment management comes the responsibility for both admissions and marketing departments to break those silos, which actually are usually our most complicated fight when we get into a project, which is marketing hates admissions, admissions hates marketing. They always blame each other. And the truth is that it should be the opposite. They should be best friends because they can learn so much from each other. They can benefit so much from the data and the insight that each other have that I personally think that that enrollment management model, which is very visible in the US and only in Europe in some institutions, I think some of the Dutch institutions, for example, are already implementing it. It's very interesting to see it. That's an opportunity for the institutions who are not implementing it, because if you break down those silos, the communication flows, there's really a better understanding on where is it that we can collaborate and co-create instead of saying, oh, actually, I sent a lot of leads to you, but you didn't convert them, or oh, I need more leads. Really? Do you need more leads, or do you need to work better with those leads and better understand the metrics so that you can have a better added value for those potential students? So I think that's one point that is important to acknowledge. Another one I would say is on the sustainability side. So you're talking about the future, right? And one topic that I've been seeing a lot is, okay, previously you would go to a lot of fairs, for example. Those fairs have been, some of them are still online and on site, sorry. Others are online. You know this very well, Girish. Well, some institutions are actually just focusing on one KPI, which is student recruitment numbers. My aim would be to hopefully inspire institutions to integrate more KPIs for these events. And a KPI can be also based on sustainability, which is how much does it cost me to truly go to that event on site, whether I would be able to have not only the ROI from it, which is the only measure that we've been focused right now, but the sustainable impact from it, the printing of brochures, the traveling, all of these elements. Let's face it, it's a lot of money, and maybe it's absolutely worth it. Maybe this is something that we take into account. But I've personally not seen any institution that tells me, actually, there is 10% of your budget that goes to sustainability or that compensates this kind of efforts in other way, right? So I think that's something interesting to take into account. Of course, the pandemic and all of the recent innovation changes, you know how fond I am of responsible AI, not only AI, but responsible AI. This is something that definitely needs to be explored more. And talking about budgets previously, I truly encourage institutions to dedicate a chunk of their budget, 10% of it, an average of 10%, where you can truly just try out new things. It might work, it might not, but at least you tried it and you can learn from it. And understanding the new tools, how is it that I can integrate AI in the journey, not to replace people as many are talking about, but actually to really leverage these current skills that you have. And therefore, it would be about, again, as I said before, if our focus is on looking at how we can better support younger generations, well, let's try maybe to understand them better first. And to this point, I would just add an example, which was for me life-changing, I would say, which is when an institution came to us, an institution from Sweden, asking us to help them in the recruitment process to start thinking already about how to recruit Generation Alpha to aspire to their PhD studies. We're not even talking about bachelor's. And these kids would be only knocking at the bachelor's door in about 3 years. But this institution is already thinking further. It's thinking about not only master's, but also how I can already plan about a doctorate. Why? Because this generation wants to do good for the world. And therefore, they want to start shaping that legacy that they can leave in this world for that generation. And for us, a genius to be able to work with them was just like, wow, okay, this has opened so many ideas for us to think about what comes next, what's the future like. And therefore, my suggestion would be to truly have this different task from the day to day to focus on what is it that we can do for purpose instead than only for profit.
I have a question. So you said you work with institutions in the Americas and in Europe, kind of those two areas specifically. And what you're doing sounds quite forward thinking, new, innovative, different to assist these institutions in achieving their goals. It sounds like mostly with student recruitment, attracting students to the institution at different levels. What tips would you, or what institutions are you finding? What characteristics do they have? Those that are the most successful? I mean, if you're working across a range of institutions, you must have seen some trends or some common denominators or common characteristics amongst those institutions that you're finding are the ones that are the most successful, the ones that are able to attract students in new and different ways. Because there are a lot of institutions out there that are dinosaurs and are not doing any of this stuff and probably need to, you know, to get on the ball with it. Where do they need to be? What do they need to achieve? How do they need to change their thinking and mindset to get to the sort of reach institutions, the ones that are moving into the 21st century, which we are already in, but they're not.
Yeah. Okay. So again, a tough one, Jessica, but I'll try to answer in the best possible way. So I think the most difficult part for us in this journey has been to learn how to say no. That, to answer your question, is about what kind of institutions we want to work with as well. We've been approached by massive institutions with massive budgets, but the way they were approaching us was about, like, I want you to do this or do that. Just do it for me. And our thinking process was completely different, which was we're actually consultants. We're here to provide you with our expertise. And therefore, if you're looking for someone to do what you already think should be the way to go, then you better hire someone internally and not consider this kind of roles which we offer, which is something maybe what we can call now a fractional role, right? We come in for a kind of project, we deliver the project, and we don't stay there forever. We empower the teams to continue. We train them, right? So I think that's already something that has enabled us to see potential in institutions who want to see the day-to-day processes differently. Also to understand the fact that we are a remote first company, and that has enabled us to better understand the market in the sense that if they're also willing to work with individuals based out of different countries, continents, they are also likely to be more open to innovation, to be less reluctant to change. So teeny tiny details that come from our own structure, which enable us to see on those institutions, what are these key elements that can take them a little bit further in what you called the dinosaur change, right? So I think that's an important trait. But also, I think right now we are at a very interesting moment where the kind of institutions who are willing to consider that the current status quo is okay to be changed because it's not under their control are the ones who are truly going to succeed. And I don't mean to be controversial with saying this, but I think public policies and what's going on with immigration in Canada, in the Netherlands, the changes in tuition fees that are now to be paid in the Nordics for international students, upcoming elections in the USA, what's going to happen, what the pandemic did with China closing up their borders. This kind of geopolitical factors have a very important power, let's say, or they have implications on institutions with what are the different student flows around the world. And the institutions who manage to understand what's going to be the next step and to predict the changes in student flows based on these policies and this country intricacies with the different politics and policy that are going to happen, I think this is what is going to be an added value and a game changer for these institutions. If they don't go to country A, then how are country B institutions already planning to receive those students? Do they need to start understanding about different educational systems because it's not the traditional country they were recruiting from? Diversification, different channels optimization, et cetera, et cetera. So we always try from our end to come with a 360 degrees project to start also training this leaders at this institutions to say, okay, it's not only about giving you more leads or about creating a CRM or curating a CRM for you. It's about asking wider questions. Why are you doing this? Where are you planning to recruit? What are you aiming to do? And by, again, looking at the macro industry to then deep dive on their current reality, that's how I believe we are succeeding at Genius, because we are truly making sure that it's not only about, I want to recruit from these markets, I want to enter that market. And that's why we are choosing these institutions that are truly willing to do that shift.
This could be another podcast that's 5 hours long, Ale, and we could be discussing this. So much going on, but I know it's getting late in Phuket, and I'm sure you have a beach rendezvous tonight or something. So let's keep you away from that. But just switching over to a little bit of the fun stuff, right? So you talked about horseback riding. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, so you've been doing that since you were a little girl, and it's something that you do to have fun. Tell us more.
Absolutely. It's my passion without a doubt. It's something I just can't control. I've been riding since I can remember, basically. And this is a family thing. I do it as a hobby. I don't aim to compete. For me, that's how I actually reach the highest levels of mindfulness for me. I do dressage. So it's just my way of connecting with the horse and with myself. And it's where, like, that hour of class I get to do, I do it hopefully wherever I travel to do these retreats. I try to do it on a daily basis, at least for 2 weeks. That's my routine. That's where, in that hour, I am only focused on that. I'm not thinking about anything else, and the world can crumble, and I wouldn't mind, right? And that's where I gain all of my energy to flow back again, and I leave with a huge smile. So yeah, that's what I actually call fun in my way.
That's brilliant. Brilliant. More power to you.
Amazing. It does sound like fun. I have a question then, also related to your annual self-retreats to increase your productivity. It sounds like you've been to lots of different places all over the world. What's your bestest, most favorite of the different locations, or are they all equally good in different ways, or where would you recommend? If I wanted to go on a retreat next week, which I do, but I can't, where would you send me?
Well, for me, Jessica, truth is that I'm Colombian. I'm always cold. Whoever knows me knows this. So I always want to be near a beach around 30 degrees. Yes. That's Celsius, of course. that for me is something that works. Having a balance, and Giri, you were joking, you think about the beach walk or the beach ride. Well, actually, this is something I do. And that for me is where I get those batteries recharged. So to answer your question, Jessica, I don't think I can mention a specific country, but I do think that what I've found powerful is the combination of good weather, nature, and without a doubt, technology detox. That for me is a must with the different, in an intermittent way, I would say, but at least this is something that I try to do during weekends. I just don't want to look at my phone. I'm connected all the time during the week. Well, I need to recharge my battery some way, somehow. And that's what I try to do on weekends.
Yeah. Hey, if you want 30 degrees, come to Minnesota. It's 30 right now, Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit. I don't know how you're doing it.
I love it. I can't do the heat. So, but I'm also curious. So you sound like you do a lot of mindfulness and a lot of reflection and horsebacks and beaches and all of that. Do you read as well? Do you use reading as a detox mechanism? And if so, what is one book that you're reading right now, or what is one book that you recommend for us that we should pick up?
Absolutely. I do read, definitely on not digital devices. I don't like at all. That's where the old soul comes back. The book I'm reading at the moment, oh God, I shouldn't be reading it, because if anything, it's putting me away from devices even more. It's it's called, The Era of Surveillance Capitalism. Which is, it's about how, like, yeah, social media.
Big Brother, right? It's all Big Brother stuff.
Big Brother, data analytics, all of that. But I like to read a lot also about society, civilizations, and how we came to this world, let's say, what we actually can do as a society to be better. Graham Hancock and this kind of writers that are thinking about, yeah, what is it to be on this world? How can we make it a better place by learning from what we've been living? Yuval Noah Harari as well. These are the kinds of readings I actually, prefer. Not novels, though.
I mean, you're definitely on the path to doing, making the world a better place with the work that you're doing, particularly as it relates to our industry. So thank you, Olive. So good to see you. Thank you for making time for us. And please do enjoy the beach for us and get a massage. Jessica and I ride some horses.
We'll be there with you in spirit.
Yeah, in spirit. Exactly. And wishing the best. And I'm sure we'll see you at a next conference somewhere.
Absolutely. Thank you again to both of you. This has been a pleasure for me to be here today. I've truly enjoyed it. And one thing I can definitely say is thank you for also creating this space for people in the industry to just come and enjoy a really delightful conversation.
Thanks for listening to Destiny Benders.